This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
So what you got for us today, Dev?
I got a little mashup of quotes, so I'm going to stick these two together. If you're waiting to feel until you're talented enough to make it, you never will. Always remember that you're unique, just like everybody else.
That's great. Yeah, those go really well together.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one, yeah, by itself, is if you're waiting to feel talented enough to make it, you never will. Right. That's always a good point. But then remember that you're unique, just like everyone else, so it shuts you down a little bit.
You're special, just how you are, and everyone else as well. that's like the participation award.
Right. Everyone's special together.
I do like that first part of it, though. Like, you know, when you feel like you're good enough, or was it like if you always are waiting to
if you're waiting to like get to a level before you think you'll never get there, or right. Definitely with YouTube or Instagram or whatever you're like, whatever social thing you're now waiting to start,
right? Like, yeah, or yeah, you're waiting. I see a lot of knife makers and things that, or even makers in general, but I see knife makers because I look for them, but people who are not at the highest level of the knife making game are still making and selling. Like it's not about being the absolute best. It's about making a product that someone wants. If your friend wants a knife and you can make a knife that's going to act like a knife, it might not be the prettiest knife you're ever going to make, but if it does the right thing, it holds an edge and it can cut. Then you've got a product that they want. And you don't have to be the best. And I think that shows when you hear people who are at the, you know, the top of the knife game, so to say, talk about their earlier works. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could get that knife back, or I wish I could get that thing back because I would have never sold it. But, you know, or they cringe to see some of those early pieces. But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. But the person who buys it appreciates it. They're not going to see every little thing. It's like, I don't know if we've talked about this before. It's like watching someone do glass blowing, right? Mm-hmm. They could just blow you a little orb or right. something, and you would love it. And that's probably the most simple thing they would want to make, and they'd be like, that's a throwaway thing that has nothing, and you would just seeing it get made.
Yeah.
So the point of starting some type of online presence as you're making stuff
mm-hmm.
immediately will help people to appreciate what you've made because you've made it and they've watched you make it.
Yes.
So even people might buy your knife, Dustin, and it's not like a master knife maker's knife.
Right.
It'll be a good knife, but they'll want yours instead.
Right.
Over the $500 whatever.
Yeah.
Because they like watching
the story.
Right. They've yeah. watched you make it. It's like there will always be people better than whatever crafts person you are.
Right.
Yeah. But so that's a good thing if you can get them invested in you in another way.
Yeah.
And then they're happy to buy what you're putting out.
Right. Yeah, they see the time and effort that have gone into it. They mm-hmm. feel like they are a part of that. And that's what they're buying. They're buying the story. You know, they're buying that experience of something that's come from a person.
Yeah.
And that's the whole kind of maker community. That's where handmade things come into play, because of course you could buy a knife that's going to work just as well and last you probably just as long, you know, from a store or online for 15 or 20 bucks. It's like I can buy mm-hmm. a Henkel chef's knife that is from their kind of off-brand Henkels for 30 bucks.
Right.
And that chef's knife is going to do exactly what I need it to do for the next however long it is until I've sharpened it down to nothing.
Right.
But there's not the story behind it. You know, it doesn't have that character to it, or the specificity of knowing that someone has taken time and worked through iterations of the same project over and over again to make each one better and better.
Right.
And so you're getting ideally the best thing that they can make at that time. And you know that story.
Yeah. Speaking of Henkel, I got a Henkel block we got one for our wedding.
Yeah.
And they definitely, I forget where we got it, but they definitely upsold us to get like a certain, you know, from wherever, is it Germany? Is that
yeah.
Henkel?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or try to get it. I don't even know if they were from Germany. You know, so many of them now are made like Taiwan and China, and you have like levels of shittiness.
Yeah, right.
It's
exactly.
Like, oh, you don't want that shitty. You want this shitty. Like, okay.
Yeah, they have the like Henkel's International, which is
right. And then you're like, yeah. Why is this Henkel block 60 bucks?
Right.
And why is this one 400? And then why is this one 1,000? You know.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we got one right in the middle, and of course, yeah. I don't even know if we've sharpened them yet, and we've had them for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I wonder where that peak is of, you know, the amazing company that gets popular,
right.
And then they hit their peak of quality, efficiency, price.
Right.
And then it gets, where's that level where the popularity line hits it, and then it slowly turns and goes down.
Right.
And then eventually you have the Chinese Henkel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 30 bucks. I wonder what year
right.
Henkel turned that and hit their peak.
Right. And I mean, you know, I think some of that comes into play when you have such high demand that you right. have to find ways to outsource your work so that way you can offer a lower price.
Right.
And I know that like Craig Lockwood talks about that in Knife Talk podcast, that he outsources different things and he wanted to make this kind of box cutter knife that was cheaper to make and sell to offer a lower price. And so you have to figure out a way to either automate or to outsource. So that way you're not putting in hours of time on all the steps that don't necessarily matter so much
right.
In the handmade part of it, you know, so yeah. you're still getting something that's handmade, but it's in, you know, the processes are different. So you can then, undersell yourself to the people who can afford that, because as you get better, and this is the same thing for art as is for craft. When you get better and you sell more, you don't ever want to undersell yourself for the same thing. You don't want to sell right. someone cheaper. And obviously, you know, there's, family discount, things like that. That's different.
Yeah.
But you don't want to sell one thing to somebody and then undersell yourself significantly to the next person, because then that other person is going to be like, well, where's the quality line? So you always want to at least match your price or keep getting better, right? Your experience then should denote a higher price. The more you do, the better you get, the higher you can charge, and you can, you know, you have that skill and you have that that background to show that there's a reason why people are paying a higher price. But eventually, if you get up to that point where then your product is expensive, then your market of people who are going to buy it becomes lower and lower, less and
right. less. Right. You're the amount of money you can make, there's definitely a peak of each thing, whatever you're doing.
Right.
As a knife maker, you're not going to become a multimillionaire unless you go that route of, hey, I've made it up here, I'm doing okay, and then a company comes along, a Chinese company or someone comes along and says, hey, we can make that for you.
Yep.
You give us, we'll do everything, you can finish it, but you give us 20% or whatever, right. and then you can keep all the rest, and we'll make, and then you go, yeah, you decide whether you want to. I feel like it's when the original maker or person like dies.
Yeah, right.
It's like when a big company really goes downhill.
When Henkel, you know, when Johnny Henkel when he went from making the knives and selling his direct knives to hiring a bunch of other people and automating and making a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And pushing and pushing, and then
his son hated him and he's been waiting to sell parts of the company. And now you can buy him at Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah, right. You get him at right, like Tuesday morning, hanging on the shelf with all the other, you know, regular knives that are there, and and the quality is about the same. That's the thing. Unfortunately, there's with production like that and outsourcing to overseas, you know, or just other companies. A lot of times, those companies who are making knives or like the what I just got recently was the sewing machine, the leather sewing machine, the real cheap one from China. Right. Well, there's, you know, eight different companies that have that exact same looking sewing machine. They're all, they're most likely all coming from the same factory, right? They're just changing it up just a little bit, a little different color, or maybe, you know, shape of this piece of metal is a little different or whatever. They're just branding it to that specific company. And they're all sending the same thing. Like people talk about, you know, CNC machines and laser printers and coffee mugs and whatever, you know, shirts and, you know, anything that you buy is basically there's a level where it gets to the point where if you're going to outsource it, there's going to be one company that does it really well, or does it well enough. And so everyone's going to go to that same company and you're going to get the same like cheap shit from, from one place, like real cheap, chainsaws and stuff. I know Wrangler Star, he did a couple of reviews on like the cheapest chainsaws on Amazon. And, you know, he gave them pretty good ratings. They all do an okay job. But what he did notice is that a lot of the bodies looked like they were made by the same company, you know, the main core of it, what's it called, not aluminum, but that like cast cheap steel or whatever metal parts and things.
And but the thing with a lot of that stuff is their quality. The issues you're going to have, let's say a normal company will only say, okay, we need 2% issues on the stuff we send out.
Right.
If two machines out of 100 have an issue, that's okay with us.
Yep.
Chinese company will go, okay, if 30 out of 100 have issues, that's okay with us.
Mm.
So you can still get something that has quality.
Right.
There's just more of a chance of something small going wrong. It doesn't mean it will. It's just when you throw those dice with that stuff,
right?
There's a better chance. So over time, you'll hear people like, "Ah, oh, that's a piece of whatever. That's not good." But it's there's always one person like, "Mine's been great."
Right? Exactly.
I've had mine for 10 years. Amazing. Like, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong. And then there's I bought one and this fell right off. Like I'm sure it did. Like it makes sense, but mine somehow is held together.
Right, because you got to imagine all those every piece of that thing has, like you said, there's the level of quality. Mm-hmm. So down to the screws that they use and the plastic molds and everything, there's a level of quality. So if you say, okay, all of this one piece has to be there, you know, there's a 30% fail rate on it, and we're okay with that. Well, now, okay, that one piece is inside of a machine that has a 30% fail rate with a bunch of other pieces that all might have that same fail rate.
Right.
You know, one person might say my blah, blah, blah fell off. Well, that's because the casting of that plastic screw handle, that one was like kind of cracked and there was no quality control. So you got the one cracked, but all the rest of them from the day, the other 1,000 that were made that day were all perfect.
Yeah. And it's how much you're going to use the stuff, right?
Yeah.
The people who really know the stuff are the professionals using it day in and day out.
Right.
And they use something 100 times a day. But the person who uses 100 times over their lifetime, it doesn't really matter to them. It's like the, I have like a Black & Decker, a cordless drill.
Right. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's cheap. I think it was like $40, came with a battery, a big, a nice size battery. And I've, anything I need it for around the house and working with our dad, building a shed and like two porches, it's always been fine.
Right.
I'm sure if I use it every day, I'd find faults and maybe it didn't have enough, but it made two porches and a shed. Like, right. I don't know what else I need to ask it to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But having said that, I wouldn't mind a whole set of a big bag of DeWalt tools.
Right. Yeah. Hint, hint. There we go. Devin needs DeWalt tools.
I would like Makita tools. I'll take that. Milwaukee.
Black and Decker, right? Isn't that that's like a Baltimore company?
It was originally, but then it's now, and I think they own a lot more people now. I think Stanley is it. There's Stanley and Black and Decker put together now.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But anyway.
Yeah, and then, but, you know, like you said, that's the quality that you're willing to pay for to use it for that amount. But then, you know, something that you love, you know, you're willing to pay more for quality. Something you know you're going to use a lot of. You know, like their computer editing software or music stuff or like TV for movies and, you know, like
microphones, cameras,
right. Yeah.
Stuff we use all the time.
Right. You want to pay for quality because we're going to use it all the time. And we know the difference between quality and what's not.
Right. I wanted to jump ahead and actually, I want to do my recommendation now. It's not,
here we go.
Cause it goes in with the, actually goes in with the quote that everyone's unique or the quote that if you're not feeling talented enough, I'm editing the Bo video right now. It should be done when this comes out on Friday. Yeah. It should be out Sunday.
Okay.
I'm on the final stretch, but I've had a couple areas where I wanted some new music.
Mm-hmm.
Because people that don't know, we, on the Art of Craftsmanship channel, myself and Matt Brown, we had a podcast with him. We do the music, but he's moved away now. So I was trying to play some music, and my recommendation is getting the Tascam DR05X hand recorder, little PCM recorder.
Mm.
It is so nice.
Like, really?
It takes a little micro SD card. It's got two mics on the top. It's all digital, obviously. But within like 3 seconds, you can have it on and sitting in front of you and recording. And the quality is so good.
Hmm.
So I've recorded multiple things for the channel just right off of that. So within 20 minutes, I can sit down, record it, put it into the computer, and then have it on something. Like I needed a piece of music.
Nice.
Grab the 12 string and play a little something.
Is that wireless?
It's all nice, in all one. Battery power, you know, little handheld things, got a little screen on it.
That's so crazy.
There's a lot of these little handheld linear recorder things, and some of them have like XLR plugs and stuff. So you could, some of them I've seen them with like 4 to 8 XLR. So you could set up
a bunch
external
of people,
mics all over. You could record a whole band with them. But this just has the mics built right in, and it's really nice. So I was doing that, but then I didn't like what I did. Just on my own, I didn't like what I played. So then I asked Matt Brown, I said, can you do a couple songs for me?
Nice.
And he did it. And so we got two new songs.
Nice.
I think I might put them both in, but I might save one for another one. But awesome stuff. But it's just, you got to love it. He's in Vegas now. I sent him a text. And then a couple hours, I have it in a recorded thing from him in my computer and it's already laid. It's already laid down on the video.
Yeah.
That's great. there's always someone better. and if you're lucky enough, you can contact them and get you to help you out quickly.
Did you use any of the stuff that you recorded?
Yes, I have. Okay. On this, I've had a couple other things where I just did kind of sparse chords and things.
Right,
and
yeah.
A couple little notes. And I also did something I recorded is already on the Pirate Saber video.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did the little drunken sailor ding 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 ding.
Right, nice.
I did that and I played that and recorded on that, so that is already out there. And yeah, you can't tell whether it's
right. It's just it's guitar, like acoustic guitar music, and it's great. It's perfect.
So that's my recommendation. That little recorder.
Nice.
And then the program we transfer. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the free, I know there's a bunch of stuff and Google Cloud and a bunch of stuff you can do, but if you don't have any of that.
Dropbox, Drive.
And you want to send something to another person where they don't have to log in, they don't have to download anything, you know, to log in an app or anything.
Yeah, right.
Just WeTransfer.
Yeah.
And send that and it'll send to whatever email you want and they can download it off the site for free.
Yeah, that's sweet.
It's really nice. So those are my early recommendations.
It's funny you. Well, just talking about Matt Brown. He recently posted on Instagram about his, 3-year wedding anniversary, and there's just a picture of his wife walking away from him, but she has the hatchet that I made for him.
Nice.
And it's like resting on her shoulder and she's walking her away. And, I think it said something like, something about, we've been together for 3 years and, I would be happy for you to axe murder me or something like that. Or it's like, I'd be happy, I love you that much or something. It was really funny. I was like, oh, nice. And the picture of my axe, and I was like, sweet. I was like, well, if you're going to get axe murdered by an axe, that's the right one to get the axe murdered by.
It'll be quick and sharp.
Exactly. Yeah, that puppy was sharp.
Yeah.
You could axe murder
I guess time. Before we get into the main topic today, what are you drinking, Dustin?
Ah, all right. What am I drinking? I have two of the same beer today.
Ah.
And it is Dogfish Head 61. Mm. And this is it's an IPA brewed with grape must. It's a marriage of fruity complexity and pungent hoppiness. This is our continually hopped IPA brewed with Syrah grape must. I think that must is the leftovers from when you make wine. So you basically like squeeze all of the juice out of the grapes, and then what's left, all the skins and all the branches and everything, all that stuff is the must.
Mm.
So it's made with grape must. It's really good. It's good. It's not super fruity. I think maybe just because grapes aren't very like tangy or what am I trying to say? It's like with a lemon or an orange or something, you get like a citrusy thing. Yeah, so you get that tang that jumps out away from a normal sweetness.
But grapes can get that too. They're pretty sharp.
Yeah,
some of the ones you use for wine, they're not very sweet at all.
Right, and I think that's maybe why it doesn't taste very fruity, is because it has a similar type of bitterness, I guess, that grapes have. Like wine has that kind of bitterness, the same thing that IPA has, but it does have a sweetness to it that's sweeter, a little bit, adds some sweetness, so it's good. So that's what I'm drinking. Dogfish Head 61.
61, they couldn't come up with a name.
What are you drinking?
I stole one of the wife's Wind Ridge cider. It's just a cranberry hard cider. Like, they have a bunch of good flavors, and we just started getting these. They're pretty good. It tastes like real fruit, so that's always good.
Nice. Yeah.
Some are weird and a little
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I got that, and then I got a Trogues Perpetual.
Nice.
I got a really great IPA. Yeah, I got a really great 12 pack. I think it was like some type of holiday pack.
Mm-hmm.
But it had that. It had Mad Elf. It had their like chocolate coffee stout. What else? Another one. It was a really good pack. It was a little expensive because those Mad Elves were in it.
Right. Yeah.
Because like a 6-pack of Mad Elf is like $15 because it's 11%.
Yeah.
So you had got three of those in there or two. I don't know, but good stuff. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dogfish Heads I'm drinking are this. The reason I'm drinking two of the same is because they're two of the last three that we had in the box, the mixed pack from last week.
Oh yeah.
which was a 60-minute IPA, 90-minute IPA. There was, one that had, right, yeah, the other one that has, it had like juniper and orange peel. That one was really good. Actually, I really liked that one. And again, all of these, they're all IPAs, so they have the hoppiness to the bitter hoppiness to balance out the sweetness, which I like. And then this one, the 61. So finishing it up.
There we go. We're set.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we, wanted to talk today a little bit about a theme that I was interested in, and I reached out to the community on Instagram and on Facebook and just kind of posed this question that, if you woke up tomorrow morning and you were blind, what would you make? And I should have like had a little sub question or a sub kind of designation that said, okay, after you get over the craziness, after you get over the the depression and all the stuff that would follow along with that, of course, as makers, you know, after you get past that stuff, and do you keep making, you know, do you have that maker? Is your maker switch still on? And if it is, what do you make? So if you are blind, you know, we depend on our eyes.
It's on, but you can't see it.
Right. and
I think
that, go ahead.
I've heard of people, working in, or you'd hear about artists or craftsmen working in, right, a shop or a studio with all the lights off, and people come in, or maybe I heard of that, or maybe that's from the Ray Charles movie.
Yeah. He's cooking fried chicken.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. So here, it's from a movie. <Of course. laughs> He's cooking fried chicken.
Yeah. And his girlfriend comes in. Yeah,
you can turn the lights on, right?
Cooking in the dark. He's like, what the hell good is the lights going to do me? Yeah, he's like frying, and he's frying chicken too, which is on top of that. It's like hot oil.
I don't need the lights on to hit your face. Get out of me.
Exactly. Yeah, but I agree. That's, you know, there is obviously a huge part of making that is about our eyes, right? We're looking at something and making sure it looks right. It's like Jimmy DeResta's saying, if it looks straight, it is straight.
Yeah, right. Right.
You can't make sure something looks straight if you can't see. And we obviously, we kind of broaden that topic a little bit more to if making things with limited means. So obviously, you know, your vision or your senses is going to be a limited means, but also that's lack of money, lack of tools, you know, just that, like, or lack of skill. Like, how do you make stuff when you don't have everything that you want or that you think you need to be a maker?
I think right off the bat, my initial feelings were you'd have to give up a lot of mm-hmm. if, say, you went blind, Dustin, you'd have to, a lot of that stuff in your shop, you just can't, I mean, you can, but yeah. I don't think you can safely use some of that stuff.
Right.
Without eyes, because, you know, any cut, anything like that, you're constantly mm-hmm. checking. It's all eyes. Look here, look there, look where I'm holding, look down here, make sure my thumb's here, make sure that's clear, look here, do it one more time, and then cut.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that happens quickly. That's all in, 2 seconds.
Right.
But that's the stuff you need. I mean,
yeah,
you can do it if you want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, again, I mean, obviously that would need, you'd need tons of training, and you'd probably also need someone else helping you at all times, you know, and that's another thing. If you were going to decide to do something like that, you might need to have someone helping you. Because you could absolutely make all sorts of stuff, and it wouldn't take away from the creativity, the mindset of creativity. You know, there are, throughout history, there are thousands and thousands, and the majority of all the most famous artists throughout history had apprentices that were doing most of the work for them. You know, Leonardo da Vinci was painting the faces on his main people, you know, or like the main characters in the actual paintings in his composition, he was doing them. He would have, you know, apprentices painting the backgrounds and painting the clothes, and, you know, they had to learn some way, so they learned from a master.
Right.
And then, you know, even up to the point where now there are artists who have, you know, studio workers who work in with him, who mix their paints or clean up or do their brushes or paint a whole background of, you know, they might have to get 30 canvases and paint stripes on every canvas because that's the background that the artist wants on all the pieces, you know? So there's definitely ways that you could have like a studio helper help you, but but then, you know, that's a different aspect of this question, right? This is, what would you make if you couldn't see? Would you be still driven to be making something?
Right. And if you can't see the end product.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe you'd make more tactile things, more things you can feel and maybe get into some type of cloth work, or I guess you could still do sheaths and stuff or knitting. You'd be a great finisher. You could sand. You could feel the different grits, and then all right, Dustin, here you go. Here's your sandpaper. Oh, get you all set up. You have fun.
You'd be a sander.
Really good.
Yeah, that. So the main reason why I thought about this question is because I came across the story of an artist named Michael Naranjo. And he is a Native American who was in Vietnam, and he lost his sight from a grenade in Vietnam, and also I think lost the use of most of the use of one of his hands. And when he came back from Vietnam, and you know, healed back up obviously and all, he went to school to learn how to live life as a blind person, and they were, you know, teaching them whatever, you know, how to read Braille, how to use sign language, how to navigate the world now without the use of your eyes. And one of the classes was like an art class or a craft class, and they were all supposed to be making leather wallets. And again, that's something you could do, right? You know, you can, if you have something that's tactile, you can feel it, you can do that. You have the memory of those movements, you know, and you can, if you know how to feel distances, you want to make sure everything is clean, edges and all the, you know, straight lines, things like that. But he didn't want to make a leather wallet. It wasn't anything that had any interest to him, and he has a background in his like grandparents and his parents, they were all artists. So he, after discussing for a while and some convincing, they let him do a wood carving. So he started with actually carving wood, and so using like carving tools on wood. So obviously, you know, he knows where his hands are, he can cut, so he was able to do it safely. And he sculpted a fish jumping out of water, and like he said, in his mind it didn't matter what it looked like, it was what it felt like, you know. So to him, it felt like a fish jumping out of water. And of course, he understands what a fish looks like, and you're using your memory as sight at that point,
right?
But he went on to become a really famous artist. He's been all around the world. He's in tons of collections. He does mostly what's called wax last, I think it is, models, where basically you're shaping, you're creating sculptures out of wax, you know, cutting and shaping wax, and then you're making bronze. So you're making a cast out of it and then pouring bronze in. So you're making bronze sculptures.
Right.
So I just thought that was like...
That's a good one. I mean,
yeah,
that's a safe way to do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because then you're working with something that is safe and malleable. It's soft enough that you can shape it. It's like clay. It's the same idea, right, where you could make something out of clay and then pull a cast from that clay, and then, you know, make a pour a, you know, concrete sculpture or a bronze sculpture from it.
Yeah, right. I think that was what... I got to meet one of the guys, the guy who sculpted the monuments at Camden Yards. He came for a game and then came after and hung out, and we all went to whatever the bar, and we got to talk to him. Right. That was really cool, and I saw off his phone the pictures of
his like clay sculpture.
His small clay sculptures.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, they don't necessarily do it full size,
right?
He just does it to a high detail amount, and then does them a little bit bigger than life size. I forget what the final ones are. Like most, like a lot of ballparks.
They're like one and a half scale or something.
At Camden Yards, they did all the Orioles Hall of Famers.
Right.
And put them in a little little statue garden.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that was cool to talk to him and see the pictures of him doing that. Right. And I didn't really understand how it worked, so it was cool to see. And then, like you said, make a casting off of something smaller, then they can figure out how to make it bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like a whole different art form, is taking someone's sculpture and, you know, expanding it. Because, yeah, you can make the model at a certain size and then make it to scale. So, say, you know, it's to scale, but it's a quarter size. So you might have a model that's, say, a foot and a half instead of 6 feet tall, like a person, right? And then everything's to scale, so then they can take calipers and they can expand it. So if the wrist on the in the foot and a half model is, you know, 3/4 of an inch wide, then they just multiply that by 3,
right,
or by 4, or whatever it is, and then they rebuild it. Now that's like I said, that's a whole other art form, because you're looking at someone's thing and then you're making it larger, because it's not like they can just, you don't put it in a computer and they expand it. Like, someone has to build it in the new size. Well,
maybe. I don't know nowadays with, like, 3D printing, and you can get digital scans of the thing itself and figure out. I don't really know how they did it, but
yeah. That was cool. Yeah. But yeah, that is really awesome. Yeah, that also reminds me of another story. So when I was right after grad school, I moved back down to Virginia from New Hampshire, where I was in grad school, and I was working. Just, you know, we're kind of working, trying to find jobs. And I approached a gallery in the town in Winchester, Virginia, where I was nearby, became friends with the gallery owner and started having some shows there. And then was introduced to another woman, Gail Harlow, who owned another art center called Opus Oaks. And I ended up meeting her and then teaching a couple classes there. But she told me this great story. My wife and daughter and I at the time went over to their and visit with their with her and her husband at their house and got to see some of the artwork that she's collected over the years. And they had this really cool sculpture in their dining room. It was like a half scale model of a bronze sculpture of a dog. But it looked pretty odd. It didn't really look like a normal, you know, dog. It wasn't super detailed. It was very kind of organic shaped and on. And so I asked her about it, and she told me about when she has taught clay sculpture classes, and her husband Malcolm's actually a stone sculptor. He sculpted several busts for the presidents that go in the, like, White House. He's done monuments all over the country. He's done, I think, the gargoyles for some of the cathedrals down in D.C. and stuff. But she was teaching a clay sculpture class, and there was a one of her students was a blind man, and he had a seeing eye dog that was a German Shepherd, and he wanted to do a clay sculpture of his dog. So what he did was, you know, he was familiar, obviously, with the dog, but the dog was there with him, and he would be modeling the clay, and he'd reach over, and he'd grab the dog, and he'd feel where the bones and the structure and the body are, the shape that he could feel. But if you know a German Shepherd, German Shepherds have long hair, and they're fluffy, right? Not super fluffy, but the hair adds bulk to their body, if you can see.
Right.
If you can't see... Obviously, he knew there was hair there, but the only way to really sculpt the shape of the body is to kind of squeeze the hair down and feel the body underneath. So the sculpture looked more like a greyhound almost. You know, it was long and sleek. Obviously, it had the kind of the typical sloped back and the shorter legs in the back, like German Shepherds do, but you know, it didn't have all those characteristics. You think about a German Shepherd, like, it had the ears, but it didn't really have the scruff, the big scruff around the neck, you know, like kind of the full body that you think of when you think of a German Shepherd. And it was like just a fascinating story. And ever since then, I've just been intrigued by artists and makers who are missing one of their senses. So it's super cool.
Yeah. The thing, I guess there's a difference between a piece of art and something that you need to use practically, right? Like, maybe someone who had lost certain senses, maybe they couldn't make a certain thing well anymore. They're not going to do wood turning. Right. Maybe. I mean, you can feel it, but No, I don't think you. I don't think you could do wood turning. Actually, you have to see because you can't touch it while it's spinning. You'd have to constantly be stopping it, checking.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's someone out there.
Right, of course. You could do it, but like you said, it's not something you would just jump right back into. Yeah,
but something like art, which your perspective on it and everything, it can be, and people love a good story behind something like that as well.
Yeah.
To find another meaning. There's plenty of people out there who can do a perfect sculpture of whatever you want.
Mm.
So that's not necessarily what people are looking for. I don't think in sculpture, unless it's some type of classical era or that's what you want. You want a perfect bust of someone.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But you might not want an artistic interpretation, but
that's the key word right there, is that it's the interpretation. Like you said, there's when you have craft, there are elements of that piece that have to work in a certain way to be that thing. So if you're turning a bowl in clay, it has to be able to hold liquid inside of it, or it has to be able to hold something inside of it. You know, like it has a shape. If you're making a knife, it needs to be able to cut and hold an edge. If you're making a guitar, it needs to be able to play a tune, and to be able to play that tune, it has to be the right length and all the frets have to be at the right space.
Right. Right.
You know, there are things that it has to do. If you're creating a piece of artwork, it doesn't have to do anything except for what you want it to do. Right, it just has to be visual, and and not even that. Sometimes artwork's not even visual. Sometimes it's completely conceptual. So it's like the limitations on artwork. There are no limitations. You can do whatever you want. It's the creativity, the manifestation of creativity, that is the difference between, the manifestation of creativity for creativity and art's sake. That's the difference between art and craft. You know, craft is that you are manifesting your creativity to make something that's usable. That has a purpose. And it's and then as opposed to making something that its only purpose is to be there visually and someone to look at and appreciate it. And that's the artist's interpretation of what it needs to do.
Right. If there's a blind, deaf and dumb, one armed like painter, that's an interesting story. If he makes you a bow and it doesn't work, you're like, man, who made this? Oh man, this is terrible. This is the worst bow I've ever shot.
Damn it! Who gave the blind guy the draw knife? Jeez!
I don't care about his story. I just want this thing to work.
It's exploded in my face 4 years in a row. I keep buying the same thing. I realize it's supposed to be a sculpture.
Yeah. How do you think I went blind in the first place, Ren? Exploded bow. I'm not very good at it, really,
but I keep on doing it. Yeah, I wondered about that too, and I think obviously my first, like, my initial reaction would be to just switch back over to art. And that's not really switching back over, because I'm an artist. It's what I do. Everything I make is, I consider artwork. And obviously the craft part of it is making something that is usable and has a purpose. Mm. But I'm just as happy creating art or making paintings. And I think it would be fun to even make this as a challenge. Like, what could I make if I were blindfolded, if I were given some stuff? I thought that would actually make kind of an interesting video.
We'd have to keep you away from the saws and the...
Oh, wait, here, let me go cut something real quick. You're like, whoa, hold on. Hey, we need to keep making this channel.
I'll give you some clay. We'll see. But I'll let you turn a bowl on the channel. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that'd be fun, like, give me a block of clay and, give me a prompt, like, make this thing. Oh, right. So that way I'm just not making something random, right? Because I could feel all sorts of really interesting shapes out of a block of clay and make them feel and look really awesome, but it wouldn't necessarily be a goal, you know? So it's like, okay, take this clay and make this thing and see if you can make it look like this thing just by your memory and by your feeling. So anyway, guys, I'm gonna see if people look forward to that video in the future.
So I guess people mainly said in response to that, actually, first, before I, who did you make that little picture on Instagram?
I did.
Mm-hmm. You did? That was really nice.
Oh, thank you.
That was really good.
Yeah, I I went online. I found just a picture of an eye. I did a Google search of an eyeball. I wanted to, have the eye. I thought that was fun. I considered at first putting like a blind person or something, and I was like, I don't know about that. Like, subjugate a blind person. I'm like, here, this is like a picture of this blind dude. But yeah, so I and then I used an app that I have called Snapseed, which is what I use to do the all of the art of craftsmanship podcast Instagram pictures, so I can, you know, I can do multiple.
Right.
And all. So I went through a bunch of their different kind of font layouts and stuff. So, yeah. So it wasn't like, it's not all my pure.
Totally from scratch, but
yeah,
it is exactly. Good.
It's yeah, nice. But I thought it looked nice. I like the way it was set up, and but yeah. So I did get some feedback on that, but most of it, like, I didn't. I was hoping that I would get some real things, like what people would actually want to make. But I got some feedback. It was kind of fun. Like this one guy, Xander MF Cruz, said, he says, "Oh man, I meditate on this every time I get in that zone when building something. I've yet to find an answer. I can only hope I'd have the will to try. But for now, I focus on the blessing of these hands and these two peepers." So that was really good. Like, absolutely. You don't know when you're going to lose your sight. And it's like, make the best of what you can as long as possible.
Right. And I think what's the answer? Brian House said, like, music, right?
Yeah, big music.
But that's almost, it would never be an advantage to be blind, I don't think, but your focus on sound.
Yep.
So making music, it can, absolutely think that's translate. One of the senses you could lose, that the thing you're working on might get improved by, because you can only listen and pay attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And then also I have Jay Bird 421 also said music. Yeah, I thought that was a great idea. I didn't really think about it, obviously, when I asked the question. I was in my mind, I'm thinking people are going to tell me what they're going to make. You know, I'm gonna work on, you know, making chairs out of wood or something. You know, like something that you can do that you're kind of you're sculpting and removing wood, and you can feel it without using machinery, right? So that's the other thing. It's like, without using something that's potentially dangerous if you make a small mistake. But then I had a couple people. I had a Hall 497 said I would make my wife go crazy. That was good. That's funny. I like that. That's funny.
It's true.
Yes. And
she'd have to be nice about it, though.
Yeah. That was the other thing. I didn't preempt the question with, like, after you got through all the shock of being blind, you know, blind. But Hithaglir. Wow. Hithaglir. Hithaglir _ says, "I guess first I would make a lot of noise from shock." I'm like, yeah.
Right, right away.
Yeah.
Took it very literal.
Yeah, that's so literal. It's literally the first thing you would do. You would make. What would I make? But I thought they were funny, even though I didn't get, like, the feedback that I was hoping for. I did get some fun feedback.
It's hard to get put out questions on Instagram. It's a little
tough. You never know, right? Exactly.
Like I said, but maybe put some out on YouTube, and we'll see. We'll try to ask.
Yeah,
I did bigger questions, or sometimes maybe we'll put out the questions like more than a day before.
No, it wasn't a day. It was like 3 days,
2 days,
a couple days ago. When did I post this? Fair enough. But 2 days ago, you're right. I did ask some of my students as well. I just kind of brought the topic up because I thought it was fun, and sometimes I try to ask them questions that, you know, are just kind of would you rather questions, things like that. So it was like, you know, if you had to lose one finger from your hand, what finger would it be? And kind of went through that discussion. Like, okay, well, your pinky. Oh yeah, I mean, I agree that, like, you know, you don't really need your pinky, you know, but it also, like, anchors the end of your hand for, like, when you're using tools, it's the end of your hand, you know, so, like, you have to get used to holding a little different. Like, maybe you could lose your ring finger. That might be okay, because I think your first three finger, your thumb and your pointer finger and your middle finger are kind of like the ones that grasp things. And
I think you need those cartoon four.
Yeah.
You know?
The Simpsons hand.
You need the easy to draw, easy to, and how, I mean, without your pinky, how are you supposed to drink fancy drinks?
I know, right? You can't
boing. Boing. Pop it out.
Yeah, bloop. But yeah, I had one of my, but I did ask a question about my students, and I also asked them, like, what, you know, what sense would you give up if you had to give up a sense, blah, blah, blah. But then I asked them if you were blind, what would you make? Because my students are all architecture students, so they're all makers and artists and craftsmen. And I didn't get a ton of feedback on it, but I did. One of my students said she would make jewelry. I was like, oh, that's great. That's a great idea. Because, yeah, you have that like motor memory of how to, you know, put wire through and twist it and do beads and shapes, and you can put them all the, you know, if you have your toolbox of all your materials, you know where those things are.
Yeah. Unless you're setting stones.
Right.
Like stuff like that where they need like the
magnifying glasses.
Magnifying glasses and the little tools and like, but general, that would be nice.
Yeah, doing beads and anything that's like beadwork or you know, crochet or macrame, you know, twisting and knotting and things. I was like, that's a really good idea. I was like, I didn't even think about that, but that's, I thought that was great. So, but also, you know, so this same idea kind of came into my head and I thought also like, you know, what would you do? And this is something that I think comes up in comments on our YouTube channel fairly often is, if you making things with limited means, making things with limited tools or limited money, you know, how do you get into, a craft in a field where there is a lot of competition? Where do you start? Like you said, for making a channel, you know, how do you decide to jump in and make a channel or make, you know, make, put something out there in social media when you have this, everyone has access to the entire world. And so your competition is so broad.
Right.
And, as far as like for, you know, lack of money, if you're getting into something and you don't have a ton of money to start buying a bunch of big, you know, expensive things, there are lots of, you know, specific craft you can get into that are, that's not super expensive. I would say like something like bow making or any type of woodwork where you're using mostly hand tools. And I think that's where the kind of the big, where potentially a big cost price is, you know, you can have hand tools, as opposed to, power tools. So you can do a lot of things with hand tools, that you can't, that you can, you could also do with power tools, but you don't need power tools to do, like woodworking, and like some metalworking as well, like blacksmithing, something like that, where you can get some cheaper materials, like mystery steel. People always poo-poo on mystery steel when you're thinking about making quality things. Well, you got to start somewhere. And if you don't have the money or the funds to be able to get a bunch or buy a bunch of good steel, or you just want to start and you don't want to waste good steel, then, you know, play with mystery steel. You know, if you want to try to learn how to shape a knife or forge out, you know, a twisted guardrail, you got to start somewhere.
Right.
And you can start, you can make, you know, small forges that are cheap, pretty, really cheap. Like I did my little forge, you know, I think the most expensive thing on that forge was the propane, you know, the burner tip. Yeah, the Benzomatic, you know, burner tip. And that was like $40. But I bought a trash can and I bought some plaster of Paris and got some sand from the golf course that I live near and sifted it. So I got fine sand and mixed it all together and made it. You know, a piece of PVC from my dad so I could make a mold and a form and a piece of a broom handle to make the out the import, you know. And that was it. And a couple lag bolts to be able to make legs.
Yeah.
So I think before that, for a total of maybe $60.
Right. And before that, you buried it in the ground and
made a wok. Used a wok, drilled some holes in it and filled it with charcoal briquettes.
Right. You go to any thrift store, Goodwill, man, the dollar woks. They always got woks.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's, you know, there are definitely ways to get into a lot of these crafts and things. And the other thing about hand tools is that you can buy, hand tools really cheaply from flea markets and antique stores and yard sales. I mean, the majority of the tools that I have, the hand tools that I have nice Stanley planes and, you know, good chisels and good screwdrivers. And these are all things that I found for a couple bucks.
Right.
Yeah. And I could put the time. That's another thing you can do if you don't have a ton of money. You can start learning how to restore tools and buy a cheap tool, do some research online and clean it up.
A cheap grinder will clean up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with a wire wheel and a grinder, I mean, that takes rust off really quickly, and a little bit of WD-40 and some sandpaper, and you're in business.
Right.
But yeah. And then also, you know, something that I use a lot and that people notice a lot and they appreciate is the use of Harbor Freight tools. And obviously, you know, there's a lack of quality there. And we, of course, we know that, you know, and that's something that if you're getting into, a hobby or a craft and you want to take a stab at it, you got to start somewhere. So why not get a cheap tool that it might last you 2 or 3 years, but it'll give you the chance to try something.
Yeah, and you also might not be into whatever you were into 2 years later.
Right, exactly.
You might have decided knife making or bow making or woodworking isn't for you, but you've dropped that grand on a nice whatever.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that's not much to you, but a lot of people it is. So start somewhere and see if it works. And if not, you got a decent tool. And if it dies on you, whatever, you only spent $40 on it.
Right.
You're not going to. It's okay.
And also, what is it? Like Harbor Freight has a really good, like a warranty policy. You know, you pay whatever it is, you pay $5 or something, and then you have a year warranty or a 2 year warranty. And it's like a no questions asked warranty. You take it back to the store, they'll give you your money back, or they'll give you another one. I know people, there are makers, and I won't name names, but people who use Harbor Freight tools because they know each year they can go back and return it and get a brand new one, and it'll work perfectly good for another year. And then they'll pay the extra $5 or $10, go back at the end of the year, get another one. <It's> like, you pay $50 once, and then it's going to last you for potentially who knows how long until that warranty runs out. You don't get back in time.
That's like, but kind of the opposite of like what people would do with L.L. Bean for so long. Mm-hmm. It's like it, but people would spend a lot knowing that they want it. Once your shirt or your slippers or backpack got tattered in 5 to 10 years, you could go get another one for free.
Yeah.
But they've stopped that.
Right. That's like
just recently.
Oh, what's the company? I think maybe it's not Duluth, or it's Filson. Filson has that with, and it's not something that they really advertise, but that's also something you're going to get from a high quality company too. That they're going to have, they're going to back that. That's one of those things with paying good, paying money for something, right? You're going to get a good warranty, and you're going to get good customer service and people who want to keep you as customers because they know that you can buy basically the same thing for a portion of the price, and it'll last you basically the same amount of time. It's like, my wife sent me a picture today of something that she was interested in for Christmas. And I'm not going to say what it is I'll say what it is. It doesn't matter. I was going to say, cause I think it might be fun to actually make this for her on the channel. It's a real kind of a minimalist leather wallet, with a hinge clip on the backside to hold some like cash. And my wife does not like to carry a purse that often. She does because she's got shit to carry. But, when we go out, if I'm with her, like she'll often not bring her purse at all because she knows that I have an ID. Like she'll usually bring her phone and her ID. Right. So she has her ID.
Right.
I have the credit card, or a bank card that hooks to our account. I usually have some cash, and I have everything that we would need. Like she doesn't need to bring her keys cause we both there together going in the same car. But she's often talked about, and in the past she had like an old wallet that was her dad's that she liked when we were in college, occasionally she would put that actually in her pocket. But she was thinking about just kind of a small minimalist wallet.
And
it was kind of expensive, the one she sent me, which is another reason why I love being a maker, because I can automatically be, I can make that. We don't need it. I was like, well, of course I'd have to, it's not just straight. I have to buy some thinner leather because all my leather is thick. It's all, for knife sheaths and things like that. So I'd have to get some thinner leather, which is not super expensive. Because it has like a hinged clip, a wallet clip on it, I'd have to get that. So I'd have to buy some hardware, but for maybe 10 or 10 bucks or something. In total cost of that supplies, I'd be able to make that for her. And the reason why I brought this up is because she, like I said, it was kind of expensive. And I was like, well, I can make that for you. And I was like, there's also probably other companies. I need to say this first because everyone's probably like, you asshole, why don't you just buy like the thing your wife wants for Christmas? Like, well, she actually, when she sent it to me, she was like, maybe this is something I can ask my uncle to get for me. Right. So it wasn't really a gift for me. It was like, hey, what do you think about this? I'm wondering if, cause this person's asked her like, what do you want for Christmas? She's like, maybe I could do this, And so, the price, like I said, I saw it. It was probably, it's like $70 or something. So for like a minimalist wallet, for $70 seemed like a high price. I was like, well, that's kind of expensive. You probably get about the same thing online, for cheaper. And she's like, well, it comes with, what'd you say? Yeah. Like there's the quality to it that it comes with because it's from a good company, but it also has like a lifetime warranty. Right. And my first thought, I was like, I was like, you think you're going to want this same exact wallet for the rest of your life? You know, like we're 37, like more than half of our life left. I was like, I can't imagine really anything, you know, that is wearable or something like,
well,
even me, I know I love things now, but there are things that I love now that I didn't like 5 years ago or so, or that I wasn't real fond of, you know?
Maybe I see your point, but I think maybe a wallet is one.
Maybe. Because,
I mean, I'm always searching for a good wallet.
Well, yeah, but for us, because like, we're guys.
Yeah, yeah, right? But so now she is, so...
She's a guy.
I mean, she might not like it, but...
Right, yeah.
Like, I use magnetic clips now on the side of my wallet.
Right, yeah.
So the wallets I've gone to is just a clip for cash, and then a spot on the other side for cards.
Right.
I like that, just because it's smaller. But.
And that's what she wants. She wants something small. And yeah, I mean, I understand that. But still, I was like, I can't imagine that, or not that I can't imagine, but it wasn't a selling point for me for the price.
Yeah.
You know, it was
I guess, is it an American company?
I don't remember.
Okay, right. I mean, it depends what you want to pay. I mean,
of course.
If I know it's and this could be any country, a local company that you know is made in your country with stuff made from your country, the worth starts to go up. And then I always think about what it would take me. Now, you, for something like that leather with a hinge,
right?
Your maker switch brain goes, I could make that for this.
Yep.
But certain things now, Caitlin's like, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, a one wheel, which is an $1,800.
Hell like, yeah.
And then I was like, that's what I want. And she's like, of course, no, we're not getting a one wheel. And that's fair. It's $1,800. It's fair. I'll have to find another way. I'll have to say I'm buying it for the channel and I'll have to somehow come out of that. I can really get really nice steady shots if I use the one wheel. But for now. Right. So then. And then, so the other day she comes to me and she's like, so I read this stupid, like, top 10 things guys want, and number one was a one wheel. So I was laughing.
So then she was like, yeah.
She was like, and then it was like pants and a hoodie. She's like, what? Who would want that? And then right away, my second gift idea is a really nice hoodie from American Giant. Like, that's the other thing I want because it's, I think now it's up to like $110.
Ooh.
It's a really expensive zip up hoodie. But so right then I told him, I'm like, well, sorry to break it to you, but I think that's actually what I want. Because American Giant, it's an American brand. Everything they get, all the material, everything, the zipper, everything's from the U.S. They make it. It's really nice. Supposed to be really durable. Supposed to last you. And a nice zip up, like nice black hoodie. Thick, you know, it's hard to find that will stay together. And I think I heard of him because it was like one of Adam Savage's like favorite things.
Yeah, right on.
Just a nice hoodie. So I had to break it to her. And that's something that I wouldn't want to pay that much for a hoodie, right?
Right.
Yeah, but maybe for a Christmas present, you can go, okay, well, why don't we do that? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. So yeah, we'll see.
Like splurge a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, you can splurge. Normally, I would just. Maybe go to Target or something and find a black hoodie for $25 and it'll last you a couple of years and then kind of fall apart.
Fine. Yeah, right.
But this hoodie looks really, oh boy.
Dang. Sorry. I was looking at the party. I was looking at the company for this wallet. It is there located in Colorado, ships from Colorado Springs. So,
you know what? Now you shouldn't order from them because any website that automatically plays annoying music when you pull that shit up.
You're done.
You're out. Sorry. Sorry. You've ruined our podcast.
And I was actually, like, I pulled it up and I was kind of waiting on the page because I wanted to say this, but I wasn't like hovering over the right video until I moved it up a little bit and started playing. But it does say the last wallet you'll ever own. And for me, I'm like, that's not a selling point for me. Like, I understand the idea behind it. Like, this is a really, you know, they're saying this is so good that you'll never need another wallet. But, like, I don't know. I've had wallets that I've made myself. I have, you know, I like leather wallets. I usually like bifolds. I feel like a really minimalist wallet. I mean, I'm sure, I know I could adapt to it and it would be perfectly fine, but there's something about that tried and true leather wallet that reminds me of Seinfeld.
Yeah, yeah. It's
like, this is an old friend.
Can't get rid of the thing. I got back issues.
You're on a slant. He's nope. He's like flies all over the place.
Gasoline Tiger Club card. Two more Phillips, I can get a free drink.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So but, yeah. All right. So buy quality if you can, yeah, or make it if you can.
All right.
I want to wrap it up with one thing.
Yep.
Talking about trying to get to 100,000 with our channel.
Yeah.
We're really close. We're probably going to make it before the end of the year. And, you know, I want to invite everybody who's listening. We're going to do a live stream spectacular, or we're going to try it. It's probably just going to be us around a bonfire.
That's pretty
funny, having some beers. But
yep,
you can join us, have a couple drinks with us. We're going to do hopefully a bunch of giveaways,
yep,
depending on what Dustin puts together, and maybe hang some axes and...
Yeah.
I don't know what, but we'll probably have some really cool giveaways. We'll probably stream for a few hours, shout everyone out. Just, we want everyone to come hang out. I think it's going to be really fun. It's going to be towards the, it's obviously now it's Friday, but sometime we're thinking around, it should be near Christmas. It should be by the end of December. So hopefully, obviously, if it lands on Christmas or Christmas Eve, we're not gonna do a bonfire party thing, because everybody has things to do. But the closest night near that where we all can get together, maybe a Saturday or something.
Yep. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's, so we're at nine, or according to YouTube Studio, we're at 98,149 subscribers. So we're less than 2,000 subscribers away. And so, yeah, we should get there. But if you guys are listening and you like what you hear and you like our channel and you're friends of ours, start sharing it, start putting it out there. We really would love to get to 100,000 before the end of the year. And yeah, we want to do some giveaways. We'll probably do a bunch of shirts and merchandise. We'll probably,
you know,
we'll do some, I might do a like custom axe or two. We might do some like purchased axes that have been modified. We have a bunch of ideas of stuff to give away.
Yeah.
And, that's just giving back. It's
right,
fun.
Yeah. We were thinking about what we could do, and we had a lot of grand ideas, but really right now we can only do kind of a small stream off of a phone, basically with a mic. So yeah, we'll probably, I don't know, maybe Dust, maybe we'll go to your place or Dad's or something. Maybe he can get a big, our father gets pretty big bonfires together.
Yeah, big brush. He just gathers all his stuff he wants to burn. And then, yeah, eventually burns it all.
So we'll see if in a couple weeks he could have something. We could all go up there and have a few friends and family people, keep it small, but it'll be outside, and we'll have a good time, and hopefully you guys can all join us on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so spread the word. Help us get there. We really appreciate everybody's support, and want to give back and want you guys to come and join us for the live stream and maybe win some fun stuff.
Yeah, if you're there, we still got to figure that out, how we're going to like draw from.
Yeah,
from I was who's actually there. That's what it's going to be. So whoever's there, obviously we can't pull from all our subscribers.
Yeah, but I had I was recently watching a live stream by Christ-Centered Ironworks on YouTube. And he does a live stream. I think it was once a month throughout 2020. And he gave one of the anvils, kind of the Chinese happy something Akio anvil. I think it was something like 160 bucks, but he did a review on the Harbor Freight anvil and this anvil and kind of found that this is a pretty decent anvil for the price. You know, it's lightweight. I think it's like 60 pounds or something, 66, something like that pounds. But if you kind of clean it up, it's got a good solid top. You know, it's an okay anvil for the price. So he's been giving one away every month for the entire 2020.
How did he do it?
And I didn't actually see him do the giveaway for the anvil, but he did do giveaways throughout the live stream where he gave away like sticker packs and some of the things he forged. And what they did is like his wife is monitoring the chat while he's working. You know, he's a blacksmith, so he's usually working and talking and stuff. And they would say, okay, you know, now we're going to do another giveaway for whatever it is. And everyone needs to put this word into the chat right now. And then my wife will choose two people. right? So then it was like everyone put it in, and she just chose two people, and that way
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and you know, it's like obviously if there are 50 people there and we're friends with all of them, or if there are, you know, ten of them are our really good friends, you know, we might need to think of a way to do it a little bit more random or something.
But Devin O'Hara types in free act.
What are you doing? Stop it,
Devin. He's like, look, I got it myself. Good for me,
Davon O'Hara. Is there a Davon O'Hara here? Yeah, I mean, and I know there's plenty of things that you can go through PC when you stream, and I know a lot of people do that, but through a phone, it's a little bit trickier.
Yeah, but so I think that would be okay, have some, you know, so you have to be there at the time we do the giveaway. You have to say, you know, the word, you have to type it into the chat box, and then you get a bunch of people doing it, and then, you know, you, like, do a countdown, and close your eyes and type it in, and you know everyone's typing in it a bunch of times. Right. You type in as many times as you want, and then you count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you put your finger on the phone, whichever one it lands on. That's it.
Yeah, you know? Or you could do like a radio thing, the 10th caller, but it could be could be the 10th word that you see there.
Right.
So everyone types and starts to do it, and then
Right. So
all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there are some ways to do that that can be kind of, you know, as unbiased as possible. That's the whole point. Yeah. Right. And then also we can, you know, that person can kind of control it too. So if somebody's already won something, then they can choose like, okay, this person, it'll be the next person, right? It's not going to be completely random. We don't want one person winning three things, which, you know, if it were completely random, it could happen. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I can be there by the bonfire. Maybe we can have a little table set up with, I can have like the laptop.
Yep.
And I can run some of that. I mean, I might come around and talk a little bit, but I mean, you're going to be the main guy with the mic, and you'll be the main guy with the
microphone. We've got two mics. Oh, I don't think going to two phones though.
Yeah. Unless we do a splitter or something, maybe a splitter, but
I'll figure it out. All right, man. Yeah. It's, I think it'll be fun. I think, you know, we're really excited to hit that milestone and, get that silver plaque from YouTube, which is pretty awesome. It's crazy that we've come this far, even, you know, like just from where we started and, you know, excitement about just getting out there and doing fun stuff and making things and then having everybody who's, you know, interested in it follow along and subscribe. It is, it's humbling. We really appreciate it.
What's your recommendation? I already gave mine.
Yeah. So my recommendation is actually, Michael Naranjo, and I will, who is the blind sculptor. I'll put a link to his, as far as I can tell, I know he and his wife started a company, and started a foundation to do art for, I don't know if it was specifically for blind people, but they had that, and then he's been in a bunch of galleries and stuff. I don't know if he has a website specifically for him. I was trying to look for it earlier, but I'll put a link to him, you know, whether that's through Wikipedia or through a website of some of his artwork. You guys can check him out. It's one of those things I think is fascinating, and check him out and see what someone can do without seeing. It's amazing.
Yes. And I wanted to say real quick how awesome was the Starship?
Oh my gosh, that was so awesome.
It was amazing. Holy cow.
Oh man, that was so crazy.
So yeah, if you guys didn't hear last week, my recommendation was to go SpaceX and watch them launch this prototype Starship, which eventually they're going to try to send to the moon and Mars. And but it's a huge thing. It's really, I mean, it's maybe half the size of the Apollo thing. But eventually, when they put the rocket boosters on the bottom, it's going to be taller than the rockets that you see, the classic Apollo giant tower rocket.
Right.
But it's this great stainless steel silver thing. It looks like
so awesome.
And they sent it up, and it finally worked. They finally blasted off. One of the rockets failed, but it went all the way up, and it flipped all the way over, and then
came back down.
Came into
perfect.
This awesome belly flop, just perfect. No, and then you start seeing the ground come. I'm like, oh, I don't think it's going to kick in. And the two rockets kick in, and it starts to spin and flip, and it's straight up and down. It's supposed to land on its bottom, kind of like their rocket boosters do. Yep. And then another rocket failed, so it just had one trying to fire, and then a huge explosion at the end because it all crashes down.
And it was like so close. I think they were talking to maybe about that. The landing legs didn't come out the way they were supposed to or something. I didn't notice that, but I heard him kind of mentioning that, but it was coming down like exactly what you said. The rocket fired, it righted itself back to vertical. It came exactly back down where it wanted to on the landing pad. after flying up, what, 14 and a half or 12 and a half kilometers or something, you know, like 40,000 feet.
Right, right. It was way up there.
Came back exactly where it was supposed to come. And I would say, I think I heard that it was the pressure of the fuel being pumped into the engine. The pressure was off. So the engine wasn't getting enough fuel to burn. So the engine was working fine, but it was the pumps or whatever, the pressure was off.
This is their first full-size prototype.
Yeah.
And they already have one built fully almost, and they got another. And then if you look at they've got like four or five iterations already being built. The one is like across the way, ready to be pulled over to the pad. Yeah. They're going to pull that one out once they get the pad cleaned up. Man, it's so cool. So if you guys aren't following
And yeah, it almost made it, and it came down. It slowed down. It was coming down. I was like, oh, it's coming in too fast. But I would say it was only like potentially twice as fast as it should have been coming down. So it was still coming down slow. It was just like, you knew that something with that much mass coming to the ground, even at the speed it was, which was really slow, it was too much. And then it hit.
Yeah, if you had those other couple rockets, it would have killed itself.
It would have done
time. Man, it was so cool that like when it was in belly flop mode, totally sideways,
This
silver rocket coming down, that was straight out of science fiction.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I like it. Everyday Astronaut kept saying his, the Buzz Lightyear, it's falling with style.
Oh, yeah. Right. So you guys can look it up on that or just go to SpaceX. They have all the extra cameras, but people like Everyday Astronaut and I think there's another one called Lab Pedro. They have their own cameras and their own slow-mo cameras that, like, right after it happens, they start showing it. It's just such a cool thing to see.
Yeah. And it was their excitement was infectious as well. They're so excited, just it was so much fun to watch. So crazy. And such a good outcome, too. You know, like, Elon Musk reported out that everything worked exactly the way they wanted it to. You know, they learned tons of stuff from it. They completely, considered it a successful trial flight. You know, obviously, it would have been great if it could have landed and didn't explode. How awesome would that have been? But they got everything that they wanted out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that there were some errors, like, you need those errors to show you what needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Right? So. And something like that has, talking about milestones, has a bunch of little, like, hey, this worked. Hey, it's up in the air. Hey, it's turning. It's doing this.
Yeah.
These things kicked on. I'm sure they hit, like, 100 things. I'm sure they have 1,000 things to fix, but I'm sure it seemed like a lot of things went right. It was really cool.
Super cool. All right. Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was super cool. So much fun to watch.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening. This has been fun. I really like the idea and this theme of making things with limited means and something that, is close to my heart as a maker, and, I'm growing in my craft. So I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that. If you want to support the channel, support the podcast, you can always go find us on Patreon. You can find us over on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can follow us on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship as well. Yeah, and also go over and check out all the other makers on the Makery Network. If you have found us through whatever podcast platform that you use, go check out the Makery Network. There's a bunch of really awesome makers there and really awesome podcasts about all sorts of fun making stuff, and you get a bunch of different perspectives and personalities and all sorts of good stuff. So go check out the other podcasts on the Makery Network, and I hope you guys join us next week. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.